Welcome, listeners and viewers, to another show on Rising Above Shadows of Abuse, RASA, where important matters relating to abuse, mental health, culture, and society are discussed. I'm your host, Grace Upper. Today, I have the honor of introducing to you a remarkable and lettered man, Dr. Don St. John. Welcome, Dr. John.
It's my pleasure to be here, Grace. I look forward to our conversation.
Dr. John is a psychotherapist, teacher, author of the book Healing the Wounds of Childhood and Culture, has been engaged in the psychological and somatic, relational and spiritual worlds for more than 50 years. He has a unique perspective on healing and human potentials. His personal journey includes enduring years of intense physical and verbal abuse in his Italian-American Catholic home. He's been married for 38 years and has a zest for life. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Please, would you like to talk a bit more about yourself?
Sure. I grew up in a tenement building outside of New York City, and it was a pretty challenging childhood with a lot of physical and emotional abuse. And graduated from high school, and 2 days later, I was in the Air Force. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And during my tour in the Air Force, my high school sweetheart and I broke off our relationship and I started drinking. And by the time I had completed my 4 years, I realized that I needed help, went to see a psychiatrist, and spent the next 60 plus years in this healing journey that I call an adventure of a lifetime. And I call it an adventure of a lifetime because I've experienced such amazing beauty and places that I never even knew about nor imagined when I was a youngster. And I do have a perspective on healing. I think that's somewhat unique and looking forward to sharing it with you.
Thank you so much. So I'm going to start the ball rolling by asking the first question. How do we cultivate positivity in our hearts and mind after an unhealthy relationship?
That's a good question, Grace. I think there are two attitudes that are important to cultivate at that particular time. They're really necessary, but also they're important throughout our lives. And the first is a compassionate attitude towards ourselves. Okay, if we've come out of a relationship that was difficult, that was unhealthy, that was painful, it's important not to add more pain by being harsh and self-critical of oneself. The second is to bring a quality of firmness, of clarity, of a no-nonsense looking at ourselves to see how we contributed to what we experienced in that relationship. And let me give you a couple of examples what I mean by that. Typically, there are warning signs way before the relationship even becomes serious. So for example, the person you're dating is obviously doing their best to treat you well because, you know, they are putting their best foot forward. But if you go out to a restaurant and they snap at the waiter or waitress, if they treat the help poorly, that's a warning sign. That tells you something about the character of that individual. And more than likely, there will be others along those lines. If you're paying attention, you'll notice that there's trouble ahead with this person. Now, often we override that. Maybe we want a relationship so badly that we just don't see those yellow and red lights that we're driving past.
For example, snapping at a waiter shows the person is an angry person or is aggressive.
Exactly. So tolerating what we don't want, avoiding difficult conversations. That's a big one. So you have a choice, sweat or suffer. And when you begin to see these things, then you can learn how to do it differently. I like to say that in the area of relationships, I was somewhat retarded in my 20s. I mean, I was not easy to be in a relationship with, given my history, my background. My parents pretty much fought all the time. And I took that into my relationships. And I had to do a whole lot of learning, a whole lot of studying, a whole lot of growing. Now, when that blurb was written, it said 38 years, but it's been 40 years now. And my marriage keeps getting better. I mean, I never imagined that I could experience that in this lifetime. And so different than where I started.
You must have put in a lot of work, both of you.
Yes, it is a lot of work, and it's very well worth the effort. The rewards are just to have a relationship that's still interesting and alive and vital and emotionally honest and deep.
Well done.
Thank you.
That's all I can say. It's coming from an abusive background, you've been
Yeah.
able to kind of, will I say, reframe or reparent yourself to say, no, I'm not going to follow the patterns of my parents. I'm going to be a deviant and live life to the fullest and have a happy life.
Exactly. And that's what we need to do. We need to leave the patterns of our parents and develop the patterns that we want and that fit who we are. And that's not easy to do. There are a lot of dynamics that make it challenging to literally grow out of the home of your parents.
Thank you for that thoughtful insight. So, does trauma influence our identity and self-worth? And if that's the case, how does someone regain their true self and find emotional intimacy, just like you have done?
To embark on the journey. I'll start there. And yes, it affects our identity and our sense of self-worth in major ways. Now, trauma is kind of a catch-all word. If you get hit by a bus, that's one type of trauma. If you have a parent that tends to criticize you a lot, that's a completely different type of trauma. And when we talk about how trauma affects one, it depends a lot on whether it's an intense shock trauma, whether it's the kind of trauma that occurs over time developmentally, like an overly critical parent, for example. All traumas have one effect in common. They disconnect us from one degree or other to ourselves as a full-bodied living organism. And we feel it's our fault, especially in childhood. A child doesn't have the capacity to look up at his parents and say, they really don't know what they're doing here. They're not giving me anywhere close to what I need. I guess I'll just wait until I'm an adult and I'll get it then. A child doesn't have that ability. They're going to feel that they deserve what they receive. If what they're getting, like in my case, beatings almost every day, slaps across the face, across the back of my neck, shoes over my shoulders. I mean, did I sit back and think, something's wrong with this woman? You know, she loses it. No, I thought, I gotta be better. I have to be better. That was the family myth. My grandmother telling me, be good today so you don't get hit. And I said, of course, I take it in as my fault. And then I formulate beliefs about my badness, my unworthiness. Then I cover them somehow because they're too painful to walk around feeling. So I cover them with philosophy, denial, repression, cutting off sensation and feeling between my guts and my heart and my awareness. And so I walk around with these holes of deficiency where self-worth, love, strength should be. And what we can do about it is recognize that we are affected at every level of our human beingness. We are affected at the level of our bodies, not just our brain, not just our nervous system, but our tissues as well. Our muscles, connective tissue, fluids, we are affected at that level. We are affected at the psychological, emotional level. We are affected at the relationship level. See, if I feel terrible about who I am, really, no matter how much I can hide it, pretend, accomplish out in the world, and still feel lousy deep inside. One of the places where it affects us profoundly is in our ability to open up and express our hearts to another human being. Because if we open up, we have to show what's there. And if we're not willing to see what's there, if we can't face what's there, okay, then we're going to interact with that facade in place. That doesn't mean one can't be content with that. I believe that millions of people are, to a certain extent, content living with that emotional distance between themselves and their partners because they haven't taken the journey to open up and see and face what's really there.
So are you saying, Dr. Don, that people don't want to be vulnerable to their partners?
Yeah, because to be vulnerable, to be open, you have to acknowledge the truth of what's there. It's not easy for human beings. We haven't, as a culture, recognized the importance of the ability to open up, be real, be vulnerable. I need to be able to say, no, you don't get to do that. Not in this relationship.
So what that means is you need to be assertive then.
See, that takes me to, you know, assertive, receptive, powerful, tender, and vulnerable.
These are powerful terms.
See, I've come to believe that we're all wounded. You can't escape it because It's in the very fabric of our culture. It's in the air we breathe. It's in the field out of which we form our families, our relationship, our very lives. Okay. Many of these things that we're talking about today are not commonly understood in the culture. You know? We're beginning to recognize that our relationships are one of the major contributors to the happiness in our lives. Yeah.
It's one of the major factors, yes. If you have a happy relationship, definitely you'll be happy. Your family will be happy because it transcends. It's like a fragrance.
Yeah.
When you open it up, it spreads.
Yep. I like that metaphor.
Well, thank you. So that leads me to the next question. What is the social political implications of trauma, especially as relates to global abuse issues? For example, human trafficking, modern day slavery, prostitution, domestic servitude, just to name a few.
Yeah. Now, our ability to evaluate a human being, to see the character of a human being, when an individual has had a lot of emotional, psychological wounds and carries in their heart a lot of negativity, they're likely to relate best to someone who's also carrying that negativity. To be able to have a clear vision and see what a large group, a country, for example, needs beyond personal needs. Okay, for example, if I have $1 billion, but my awareness is such that I really can't see beyond my own little bubble or big bubble, I will fight for lower taxes for those who are as rich as I am, regardless of the effects that has on 90% of the population. As we heal, as individuals, as a culture, we realize that it's not a zero-sum game. I can't gain if you lose, that you are connected, that we have to hold the entire playing field rather than fight for mine at the expense of yours. Trauma, and again, it's unavoidable, and there are levels, but most of us have endured. If you really look at what human beings need for optimal health, we're a complex organism. You know, a plant needs sunlight and water, sometimes some fertilizer. Pretty simple, but if it doesn't get those, it'll wilt. We need a whole lot more. We need to be seen in a certain way. We need structure, freedom, affection, connection. We need help figuring out what we're feeling and how to express ourselves, how to express our feelings. We need help developing our spirituality and recognizing that we're all children of the same God, regardless of whether we're male or female or black or white or South American, North American. We're all connected and holding that perspective requires a degree of inner healing. It requires a certain connection to our hearts. Let's take the politics in England, but you probably have heard of how polarized it is in the United States these days. Yes?
Yes.
Well, if we recognize that the solution to that is an elevation of consciousness, an awareness of how our own wounds limit us in so many ways, and we feel trapped and feel like we've been passed over or we don't belong and we want somebody to blame for our condition, you know? And the more that healing occurs, it will be reflected in the political discourse that occurs at the national political level and the lower levels. So that's how I see it. The journey is towards becoming whole, to understand that means it's not an end point. We don't reach it and then rest on our laurels. It's a process of continuing growth at every level that I had mentioned: somatic, psychological, relational, spiritual. The more people are aware of that, the more the culture will change. It is happening. I mean, the fact that we're having this conversation is part of that.
Thank you. So you talked about being connected to each other, maybe as a community, then communal level, then to the society as a whole, and then to nations, which will culminate to things. So, in terms of relationship, what is relationship in transition? And how do people recognize what role awareness is, the difference between it and self-awareness?
Back in the 70s, I gave my first public lecture, and I titled it Relationships in Transition from Role Awareness to Self-Awareness. And I started by saying, when my grandfather courted my grandmother back in the very early 1900s, just at the turn into the 20th century, whatever he did, I heard a story of him tossing pebbles at her window to get her attention. But soon he proposed, they got married, and they never asked questions like, is this marriage satisfying? Do we communicate? Are we really emotionally connected? Can we go deeper? He knew his job, his roles, and she knew hers. He went to work, came home, sat down at the dinner table. His meal was presented to him. The dishes were taken away when he finished and washed and put away, and he never touched the thing inside the house. My grandmother did all that. She never stepped out of the house to go to work. She never thought about a career or, you know, personal fulfillment. They had their roles and they did it. And that was that. I'm not saying that's better, not at all, but I'm saying that's how it was. They knew what their job was. Now, 100 years later, that's not clear anymore. What's clear is that couples get to work that out. And that's where the self-awareness comes in. I have a client, a young man married to an attorney, and she's the one who goes to work every morning. He takes care of their three very small children, and he loves it. And she seems to like it. I have not met her, but evidently that's fine with her and it's fine with him. 100 years ago, that would have really been weird. He stays home, cooks, takes care of the children, does some small outside jobs here and there, but he's the primary caretaker and she's the primary provider. And that's based on their personal preferences, on their education, and it's their choice. And it's not so strange in 2024.
And I guess mutual understanding as well.
Exactly. But in 1904, that might have been a little unusual to say the least. And they could change it at any time, and couples can work out how they want to do it. Okay? But they're not doing it based on culturally prescribed roles. They're doing it based on their own understanding, preferences, values, desires, interests. And they're also very concerned about the quality of the relationship. They will ask questions like, are we really communicating? Are we really close emotionally? Am I getting what I need here?
Those are vital questions in our current society. I mean, this the turn of the century, because that's what cements a relationship.
Yes, they are important ones. And we need a lot of compassion and understanding that these are seismic shifts that cause a lot of turbulence. There's a whole lot of conversation these days about what's happening to men, and men don't know their place anymore, and men are getting weak, and then there are backlashes with speakers who are encouraging men to take over again and bring back the male of yesteryear. It's not easy going through major cultural shifts as we've been going through for the last 50 years.
I guess the question everybody should be asking their partners is it working?
And how do you define working?
Are they
It
compatible? Is that emotional bonding between the
is.
couple? Are they happy in the relationship? Is it a give and take relationship? Because these are very important as well to mend the relationship.
Yeah, I agree. If a person has never had a secure bonding experience, meaning never had a relationship where that person could share their deepest feelings completely transparently, honestly, what's in your heart. If you never had one with either parent or grandparent in that relationship as a child, will carry into your adult life. And you'll have to work to develop that kind of trusting, secure relationship.
So, does culture play a role in healing the wounds of abuse?
There was a time when trauma wasn't even recognized. And when I went to graduate school, I don't remember a single lecture or a single book assigned about trauma. It didn't exist. And I think it was the Vietnam War when soldiers began returning home with PTSD from those experiences in the war that we as a culture began to recognize the effects of trauma. So when it's denied, when it's not recognized, then an individual is suffering without any understanding, without the resources to get help and to improve their situation. When we recognize it, we develop more resources, as we're doing now. There are many resources out there now, including my book. My book mentions many disciplines that people can look up to get help. The psychotherapy realm, the somatic realm, the relationship realm. So, yes, definitely, culture has a big effect.
Thank you. So, is there a link between trauma and PTSD, that is post-traumatic stress disorder? And how do survivors of abuse heal from post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, post-traumatic stress disorder is caused by a trauma, a significant shock trauma, like a wartime kind of trauma, or a mugging, or a rape, or being hit by a truck. It really seriously disrupts the system and makes it very hard for the individual to function with PTSD. And there are therapies that are specifically designed, for example, EMDR is a therapy specifically designed for PTSD. Somatic experiencing is another therapy designed for PTSD. And again, I encourage people, whether they have PTSD or not, to begin the journey, to embark on this amazing journey of healing and evolution. It's already happening. The train is moving. We can participate in it, or we can be dragged along. It's faster and more fun if we participate.
That's true, because most people are broken.
Most people have a lot of room to grow, for sure.
Thank you. So, how useful is somatic therapy for someone who's experienced trauma then?
Essential, because as I said, trauma affects every dimension of our being. And it most certainly affects our body, our brain, and nervous system. It affects the whole body. And there are many different kinds of somatic therapies. And it's good to really understand what's out there and what can help. I think that's one of the most important messages I can leave your audience with. There are many, many things out there that can help our journey that weren't in existence 50 years ago. 50, 60 years ago, we did not have the tools, the understanding, the disciplines that we have now. And we didn't have Google to help us find them. Now, plug in somatic therapy, see what comes up. I describe several of them in my book, which is also out on Audible right now. You can learn about them that way. So find out what can make your life richer, more fulfilling, what could help you experience deep emotional connections.
Dr. Don, St. John, are you able to tell our viewers and listeners the name of your book?
Yes, for sure. Healing the Wounds of Childhood and Culture, an Adventure of a Lifetime. And it's an adventure. And as most adventures, Grace, there are challenges, there are surprises, some wonderful, some challenging, some breathtaking views. Definitely worth embarking on.
And they help us to grow as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So kindly shed more light about the four essential and interrelated components that bring about healing and increases human potentials or capabilities.
The first is I call the somatic dimension or component. And yes, they all are interrelated and really hard to separate experientially, but for learning purposes, it's valuable to separate them. And the first is our connection to our body. Think of a cat. Watch a cat move. And you can sense the connection and the awareness throughout the whole body. Everywhere breathes, everywhere is alive. Most human beings don't look that way. So pay attention to that. And I mentioned earlier, there are many somatic therapies that are out there. The other, of course, is our psychological, emotional dimension. What do we truly believe about ourselves, about other people, about life? Is the world safe? Can I really get my needs met? Is what I do valuable and worthwhile? These are deep beliefs, and we form them usually by the time we're 5 years old. Okay? But they function as filters, and they allow into our awareness what's consistent with them. And they filter out what's inconsistent with them. So, for example, if I have the belief that people are generally nasty or mean, I won't notice the 100 times that people are nice to me. But I will notice and remember forever that one time that someone wasn't. That's what I mean. The third is our relationships. Let's get skillful. Let's understand what it means to be intimate with another human being, to be both strong and assertive, tender and vulnerable, to be willing to sweat in deep conversations, to be willing to let go of those minor annoyances as quickly as possible. And let's understand what it means to grow spiritually. If you're a Christian, what does it mean to be like Jesus? What does it mean to elevate your consciousness to where it's as his was? Another way of looking at being spiritual. So,
Christ was forgiving. He was receptive of everyone. He was loving. He was kind. So is that what you mean? The Christian ethos.
But he also knew that he and the Father were one, right?
Yes. The triumph God. God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Lovely talking to you.
Thank you. So, how do we experience both freedom and connections then, especially in the relationship, after experiencing a toxic relationship?
Well, freedom and connection seem like opposite poles, but they're not. Both are needed in a good relationship. I want to give an example of the human body. What would freedom and connection look like in the human body? On one hand, every joint would be free to do what it's designed to do, right? Doesn't that sound ideal? Every joint free to do what it wants to do, what it's designed to do. And connected to the whole, coordinated, connected around the central core, for example. See, both freedom and connection, both a sense of inner freedom and an ability to get very close to the other person. It's not a static place, it's more dynamic. It moves sometimes. For example, I find like I need some space from my wife. I need some time alone. need to go do something that I just want to do alone or with friends or something. And other times, it may feel like, better spend some more time with her because I've been doing a lot of my own stuff lately. So it's dynamic, it moves back and forth. But ideally, it's always present. And when relationships are distressed, they're either too stuck together or too far apart.
That's when codependency comes in, and that can be unhealthy as well.
Yes, exactly.
So, given that situation, what is the importance of forgiveness then, especially to someone who's gone through a form of abuse, maybe sexual or physical abuse?
Well, let's say that I'm the person who was abused. You know, as I was in my childhood, I was beaten frequently. Now, to have the perpetrator, in this case, my mother, feel forgiven doesn't come from me. That comes from her own connection to God, to the divine, and it comes from her recognizing what she did and feeling the pain that she caused and being committed to not doing it again. Then she could feel forgiven. Now, from my side, as a person, the recipient of that abuse, what I can do is let go. I can let go of the animosity, let go of the rage. And believe me, there was rage and terror in my heart. And I had to find it. I had to connect with it. I had to feel it so that I could let it go, so that it wasn't poisoning me anymore.
So what you're saying in a nutshell is your mother had to forgive herself for inflicting the pain on you, and you had to let go of the rage. And how did you do that? By processing your emotions and feelings.
Yeah, by processing them, by getting in touch with them, beating the bed and the pillows, getting body work and all the somatic work that we talk about to get the effects out of my body. And then I could feel the love again. It's the journey. That's the work we need to do. And we all carry stuff that we can let go of.
So in a nutshell, that's part of the process for forgiveness.
In a nutshell, what is the process for forgiveness? Well, again, it depends on which side you're speaking from. If you're speaking from the side that did the injuring, in this case, my mother, let's say, she has to recognize that she hurt, that she caused pain. I have to recognize in my early relationships the pain that I caused other people. Now I have to like really work with that to feel it. And that humanizes me in a very profound way when I can recognize that I, in fact, out of my own unconsciousness, hurt people. Even though I wasn't intending to, and the people who hurt me, I have to feel what I have in my heart towards those people and work to let it go.
Thank you. So what last words do you have for our listeners and viewers?
I think the most important thing to do is to learn to accept yourself exactly the way you are, exactly the way you're not, and embark on this journey of evolution.
So that means Work on your weaknesses and be a better version of yourself.
Yes, and it also means celebrate your strengths. Don't minimize them. Don't try and be better or worse than who you are, what you are. And that's not easy. We're always either building ourselves up or putting ourselves down, and to do neither, to be ourselves, takes work. Not sure I'm there yet.
Everyone is evolving. I'm also evolving as well. It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress, for sure.
Thank you so much, Dr. Don, for joining me on this show. It was a pleasure having you here. I've learned quite a lot from you.
Thank you for having me, Grace.
You're welcome. So, listeners, you've heard Dr. Don, St. John. Celebrate your strengths, but work on your weaknesses to be a better version of yourself. So, on that note, we've come to the end of today's show, and I'll see you on our next show. Bye for now. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for coming.
Oh,
I
you're
really
welcome.
appreciate that.